Hi, I'm Mike Dilk and you're listening to the Relax Back UK show, the show that explores all kinds of health topics relevant to you, your family and your friends. Each week I talk to expert guests from a range of backgrounds to inform and entertain you. So please do join the Relax Back UK family and stay tuned.
Hi, and thank you for joining me on the Relax Back UK show. Now, when was the last time you received a compliment?
They love to receive more compliments, but it feels like there's a discomfort in both giving and receiving at times.
Psychologist Dr. Linda Papadopoulos tells us why we might not have received or given a compliment for a while, and also why they're good for us. Then we have a look at our eating habits with Sarah Stannard. She's a health coach.
So we are looking at type 2 diabetes, if there's obesity present, looking at heart disease, some cancers, some autoimmunes. It really is negative for us to have these in our diet.
We cover UPF, that's ultra processed foods, and all kind of things. But before we start, I want to invite you to join me for a little cycle ride. I will be on my Watt Bike on YouTube on Tuesdays, Thursdays and Fridays at 12:30. Join me for a little pedal and it'll be fun. We'll have a little chat as well. But please do stay tuned now for a great show. Thank you. So compliments are the first topic today, and I started by asking Dr. Linda Papadopoulos, are we giving compliments less and less today?
It appears we could be doing better on the compliments front. It's been interesting. I've been working with M&S, and the whole campaign came about in a fun way, actually. They have this channel where people try on clothes and buy clothes. And one of the things that they kept hearing was this catchphrase of love that. And it kind of took off, and people were telling it to each other, saying it online. And then they started thinking, is this a common thing? Do people kind of, you know, express these compliments? And interestingly, while they remain obviously a really important part of our lives, we're actually often hesitant to give the compliments. So it seems that, you know, the majority only receive compliments occasionally, about 66% of us. You know, it's not an everyday thing. It's a very sort of specific on occasion, even though the vast majority say they love to receive more compliments. But it feels like there's a discomfort in both giving and receiving at times.
Okay. So is this a great British problem? I suspect you've got family that's kind of Greek from your name.
I do.
Do other cultures have a similar issue?
You know, I think it's absolutely a cultural thing. I think it really varies. So whenever I work over in the States, I think people over there tend to kind of compliment themselves a lot more. They're much more open about their accomplishments, their achievements. I think Brits generally kind of play down their achievements. They play down. I think it's very frowned upon to be seen as having hubris, to, you know, it's to be seen as arrogant. And I think that's where we're
kind of... It's a bit annoying, isn't it?
It can be. But I think there's a difference. I think we're conflating that kind of arrogance with kind of noticing something we value in somebody. And I think that therein lies the problem. I think there's something very different if someone walks in and says, hello, I'm fabulous, you know, I look great, I sound great. And it's something completely different that when you see something that you value, calling it out. I really enjoyed the way you asked that question. I think, you know, that color looks great on you. I like the way that I see you interacting with that person. I think that's where we're having the problem here.
All right. Well, that leads nicely onto my next kind of thought. I was going to ask, what do compliments tend to be about? And does that change kind of from culture to culture?
So generally speaking, we tend to compliment humor and kindness. They lead the way. So my God, that was I think it's easy. Kind of, my God, that was really funny. Or like, oh, thank you. That's really kind of you. I think that flows off the tongue easier. But it is followed closely by clothing. So, you know, love that color on you. Love what you're doing. So that you know, with that scarf. And I think that's very sort of validating because, again, it's about us, you know, it's about being seen, I think, ultimately, Mike. I think one of our bigger fears as people is that we become invisible, right? That we're all so insular now. We're on our gadgets, we're on our devices, and we stop interacting, being seen. And I think one of the reasons that I love speaking about this is because this isn't fluff. Like, you know, psychologically speaking, this is very deep. We're social creatures. Bonding was about survival for the vast majority of our of our existence. And one of the best ways to bond is to be seen and validated and valued by others. And I think that's why compliments are so critical.
Actually, that leads on to something that I was really thinking about, because I know they have a kind of a powerful psychological impact. It activates dopamines and all that, and lots of feelings. Like fear, shame, joy. They have like an evolutionary use, don't they? So I was going to ask, what is the evolutionary use of the feeling you get when you're complimented, or the feeling you get when you compliment someone?
It's bonding, it's
Yeah.
connection, it's safety, it's social safety, right? I feel like, and it's also around identity construction. You know, those of us that are parents know that when you're raising a child, what you do is you want them to lean into things that are, you know, that maybe they don't see about themselves. So, you know, if I keep saying to my kid, well, you know, my goodness, you're really thoughtful. That was a thoughtful thing you did. They begin to think of themselves like, oh, well, maybe I'm a good person. Maybe I'm
Sure.
thoughtful. Maybe that's a good thing. So you're absolutely right. These things are very powerful, both intrapersonally and interpersonally.
But if that's the case, if we're hardwired or it's stuck in us kind of from evolution, why is it dying out? Why are we doing it less and less?
Because there's always an interaction effect when we talk about human behavior from evolution and then socialization. And sometimes those things can be incongruent, right? So we know that men give and receive a far fewer compliments. I think to a large extent it's because men are sort of socialized into interacting with each other through banter. So you guys are much more likely to make fun of each other's haircut than to compliment each other's haircut. And that's actually can be seen as validating and bonding, right? Because you can tell your buddy, like, really, you're going out like that? And you kind of giggle and laugh, and he knows you don't mean it, or maybe he doesn't, I don't know. But you think that he knows you don't mean it. And so we kind of lean into that also. I think it's a lot more socially. Can be more socially risky to compliment the opposite sex because it can be seen as flirtatious. So, in the workplace, if we were working together, we both saw one of our female colleagues wearing a beautiful dress. If I said, "Gosh, I love your skirt," it would be very different, perhaps, than if you said, "Gosh, I love your skirt," or at least you might
Sure.
feel that way. So, I think that gets in the way. So, yeah, I do think our social norms and rules do absolutely or have the potential to get in the way.
But then some people obviously do it very successfully. I mean, do you think, is there any data? Do successful people, successful business leaders, or even world leaders, do they give compliments? Donald Trump gave a few yesterday, kind of.
To himself. Yeah, look, I think that we know that people that have high emotional intelligence are able to make other people feel connected and secure. Now, compliments are one way of doing that. And interestingly enough, one of the ways that we also know how to do that is to be a very good listener. And if you think about it, a person that's good at complimenting is someone that's good at engaging with the other person. So whether it's like I'm looking at what you're doing or what you're wearing, or I'm listening to what you're saying,
We
that's
might
a
be
big
shifting
part
away from Donald Trump a little bit now.
of it. Just a tad.
Interesting. So, but that is interesting, because I am interested in businesses and cultures and organizations. So do you think there can be a culture that allows compliments? I mean, I suppose what's stemming this question is, why are M&S interested in compliments? I mean, are you allowed to compliment each other in M&S, or HR on top of you like a ton of bricks?
I'm pretty sure that what M&S are picking up on here was more about the interaction effect of how people felt while they were wearing their clothes when somebody noticed. I think that's where this whole thing came from. And I think there's a beauty in that, right? Because clothes can be seen as frivolous, they can be seen as like, oh, you know, materialistic. But actually, I think what they're picking up on is that feeling that you get that someone paused, looked up, was inspired, saw something, and was able to kind of say that to me. And again, that's hugely validating because not just about that, you know, the process of all that, right? So you and I are talking. While we're talking, I notice what you're wearing. While I notice, I kind of decide that I really like it. And then I make the point of telling you, like, there are a lot of steps emotionally and cognitively in that. And because we're wired to when we hear something like that, to feel again that sense of connection, immediately that's validating, not just that, you feel good about yourself, but you feel good about what we're doing, what we're building between us as a relationship.
Okay. So when was what was the last compliment you received then, Linda?
I was complimented on my sweater, actually. I put it on this morning. My husband was like, "That's cute." I'm like, "Thanks." So, yeah, it was nice to, it's always nice to kind of get those little compliments, those little moments. How about
Yeah.
you? What was the last one you received?
Okay, so this is, I mean, it's not something that I think about. But yesterday I received two compliments. One from a neighbor saying that I look smart.
Nice.
Yeah, and also one from a customer who said, "Oh, I like the way you asked the questions in that interview, etc." So, but it was interesting because I wasn't angling for them, but I knew I was going to be talking about this today. So I wonder how if that influenced me some way to kind of look for them. I'm not sure. I
Maybe
don't
you
know.
were open to them. Maybe,
Perhaps I
yeah,
was
maybe,
open to them. Yeah.
yeah, maybe that's it. And maybe that's what we all need to be a little more open to, instead of all that self-deprecation of like, oh, this old thing, and like, oh, no, it wasn't. Maybe just being like, wow, thank you so much. That made me feel good. Because, like, and you want to do that to the giver as well, right? To not sort of denigrate what they're saying.
What about our partners, our wives, our husbands? Should we compliment them often, hourly, on a daily basis, you know?
You know what? I don't think it's about the frequency. I think it's about being detailed in your compliments. I think people can see through platitudes. If I'm walking around being like, "Oh my God, you're amazing and you're fabulous and you're one," people immediately see through that. But think about what you just said to me. Someone said, "I really like the way you ask those questions." That's much better than someone going, "Hey, great show. Awesome." That was because it was specific, because it's something you probably value in yourself, right? This is part of your identity. And because the person that said it took the time to ensure that he wanted you to know that he'd really seen you. He'd really kind of paid attention. Likewise about your appearance, right? You look smart. It wasn't like just a basic, you look good. You look, it was something a bit more nuanced. And I think the more nuanced things are, the more congruent they are with our identity or what we value in ourselves, the more likely we are to accept them.
Interesting. So, are you going to be analysing the comments on the M&S website a little bit more? Has this kicked off a whole programme?
We'll see. We'll see. They're going to be doing a lot more. And I'm delighted to hear about this. A lot more on this idea of exploring, that human connection around compliments. And I think it's something that we need. Like I said earlier, there's just so much of us kind of going into our little cocoons and surrounding ourselves with our own worlds. We're just looking up and just looking for the things we value, for grace, for beauty, for kindness around us. I think is probably a good thing for all of us.
Yeah, we should all compliment each other a little bit more, I think. But if people are interested in the kind of the effect of compliments and what it actually does to us, or maybe how to use them to get what you want, I don't know. If they want to find out a bit more about the psychology, I suppose, of compliments and the brain chemistry and all that. Can you're going to tell me you've written a book now, but can you point people to a good source of information that Joe Public can use and understand and enjoy?
If they Google the Love That campaign by M&S, there should be a lot of what we've spoken about today for sure. And it'll go into, yeah, like you said, just the goodness of it, both physiologically and psychologically, and how we can do more of it.
Okay. Thank you very much, Linda. I forgot to say you're looking wonderful today.
Likewise, likewise, Mike. Great to see
Good.
you.
Thank you for taking the time to chat.
The station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job, she was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy, but every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movements and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Sarah Stannard kindly came onto the show to talk about the nation's eating habits, nutrition and food, that kind of thing. And when guests come on to talk about those topics, I generally ask their qualifications and experience first of all.
Thank you. That's really kind of you. Thank you. So I am a health and wellness coach. I'm registered with the UK IHCA. I studied about 6 years ago and subsequently have studied several courses further, a menopause transition, mental health first aider. I studied with the IIN, which is the Institute for Integrative Nutrition. As a health coach, I support one-to-one clients on improving their health, and that can be with sleep, stress, movement, nutrition, all of those areas. And then I deliver wellness events and workshops for businesses around supporting their employees' health, which I love, love, love to do. Okay. I used to be a sales director for many, many years, and I became ill myself in my 30s. I had an autoimmune, I was diagnosed with MS, and so I had to turn my own health around. So although I've studied lots, I actually have my own health experience, really. I took control of my health. My nutrition was shot, like awful. I was super stressed. I didn't exercise. My sleep was terrible. Too much alcohol, doing lots of corporate events and wining and dining clients. And so I had to sit back and actually look at my own health. So that's how I am right here today.
Okay. So most of it is based on sort of firsthand experience.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I did actually look up the Institute of Integrative Health. Is it? No, the Institute of Integrative Nutrition. Exactly. And it doesn't actually award degrees as such, does it? It's not really accredited as a university or a college.
It's not a university or a college, but it is a level 4 diploma that I studied over a year. And I've also taken the exam with the International Association for Health Coaches, which was the next stage after studying with the IIN.
Okay, very good, very good. Right, so what is, let's move, thank you, because I always ask that, because there are an awful lot of people sloshing around on social media that give advice on nutrition. So I think it's very important to put qualifications, whatever they are, out there for all to see. So you're more of a health and wellness expert, although today we're talking about nutrition.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not a nutritionist or a dietitian. However, I have studied across the board on nutrition, but alongside that, the supportive areas, which are sleep, stress, movement, and all of those areas that really are for whole health.
Yeah. All right. So I have absolutely no doubt that as a population, we need help in all of that. Yeah. But let's just home in a little bit on what we're all eating. And the big thing that everyone is talking about, not all the time, but it seems like a lot of the time, whenever I turn the radio on, ultra processed foods crop up.
Yes.
Now,
yes,
What are they, and how many of us eat them, and how much of that kind of stuff do we eat?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a recent study by Yazio around the amount of ultra-processed foods that we're all consuming. And it turns out from this study that it's around 7 out of 10 Brits are claiming that they have it weekly. And within that number, there's 11% that are suggesting that they have it every day, ultra-processed foods. Now, that is, it's not, for me, it's not shocking because ultra-processed foods are everywhere.
It seems kind of low to me, I have to say.
Yeah, I think it's not a massive number. I suspect it's more. So the ultra-processed foods, we're looking at ice creams, ketchups, processed meats like sausages, some types of bacons. We're looking at breakfast cereals, some breads, all kinds of things like meal deals, crisps, all of these things.
Chocolate. What about biscuits? If you have a cup of tea in the afternoon and a digestive, that's a UPF, isn't it?
It is, yeah. There's ultra-processed food, absolutely. So it's difficult to avoid, really. Even things like
ketchup. So what was the percentage you gave of people eating it like most days? 10%. Yeah. I would have thought 11, like 95 or more.
Yeah, 11%. It's higher in 18 to 24-year-olds, and I believe that's predominantly because they're always on the go, rushing from work to here to there. They don't necessarily think about cooking and nutrition. But yeah, 11% are suggesting from this report that they eat it every week.
Okay, I must admit, I can't remember where I saw this statistic, but half of all calories in the UK from UPF, half of all calories that are eaten, probably from UPF, which is pretty shocking. And also that's kind of at odds with your 11%.
yeah, absolutely. That number is interesting. I think it definitely is more when you think about your daily food intake. Oftentimes we're having breakfast cereal, which is full of ultra processed foods. Then we're going on to lunch, and if we're having a sandwich and a packet of crisps, you might have the meat, might have ultra processed foods. It may have a bit of lettuce on the side, but the bread could be ultra processed. And then the crisps are obviously on top of that. You might add a Red Bull or something like that, or a Coke Zero, whatever it is. And those are just full on throughout the day without adding any fruits and vegetables, and then go on to the evening meal. And if you're not cooking, if you're eating a ready meal, then again, you're going to have ultra processed foods. So they are absolutely everywhere, which is why it's great that we're making people sort of pay attention to their nutrition and having conversations about it.
All right. So I've got to ask an unfair question. What did you have for breakfast?
I had scrambled eggs and some toast.
I can see the halo from here, Sarah, gleaming above you.
Toast. I did have a sourdough, which is one of the healthier ones. But honestly, it's everywhere from all of our points of view. You know, it's hard to avoid.
I had Alpen, which I'm sure, well, I mean, that's a cereal, comes in a box. It says in big letters, no added sugar, but yeah. I'll bet... And I must admit, I haven't looked at the list of ingredients. I bet there are some things in there that I wouldn't recognise.
There probably are. Yeah, absolutely. And it's going to have been through the processing, through that process of making it processed. So it's so hard to avoid. There's other options for breakfast. A nice yogurt with some fruit, or like I say, eggs and avocado or something like that you can turn to as an alternative. And I think with ultra-processed foods, it's trying to avoid them as much as possible. And
which comes to kind of an important question. Why? I mean, you know, people are talking about UPFs. What's the problem? Generally rather tasty.
Yeah, they do damage our health overall in the long term. Regular eating of ultra-processed foods are just constantly filling our bodies with additives and that are unhealthy. It's going to push inflammation in the body, and then in turn that can turn into a chronic illness. So we are looking at type 2 diabetes, if there's obesity present, looking at heart disease, some cancers, some autoimmunes. It really is negative for us to have these in our diet again.
Tell me, because this is a phrase that gets thrown around. Oh yeah, it causes inflammation. All right, so you know, if I'm banging a nail in and I hit my thumb with a hammer, I get inflammation of my thumb because there's a bruise. Yes. What does this, if you eat that, you get inflammation in the body. What does that actually mean? Because I've got to admit, I don't really get it. What does it mean?
It's interesting. So if you're eating unhealthy foods, your gut is trying to process them, and there's negative particles coming from that, which are causing the body to react in a certain way and giving us the inflammation. So when that adds up and keeps, we keep adding to that, like there's some talk about with arthritis and things like that, that's an inflammation of obviously in the body. And there's food groups that can cause that to increase and be more prevalent. And so the body reacts to certain foods, and the gut will either like it or not like it. And depending on whether it likes it or not, it's going to be fighting against the negative types of food that you're using.
Right. And you mentioned then negative particles in food. Now, on this show, we like stats. We like published papers. We like scientific information. Now, this is probably an unfair big question, but can you give us a bit more detail there of what it is we're actually putting in our mouths that causes this inflammation?
Yeah, absolutely. So when we're eating something that our gut, for example, does not like, it's going to process it, but it's not going to be happy about it. And our gut health is going to be damaged. So what we're trying to do is promote people to eat healthier foods, which are giving us all the nutrients that our body needs. We're going to get the vitamins, the minerals, the antioxidants. And if you're doing the opposite of that, which is having the ultra processed foods, all of the negative elements of that food are damaging to the body.
I suppose that's what I'm after. What are the negative elements?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard for me to give you that as I'm not a nutritionist or a dietitian. So I don't know the breakdown of every element of whatever example we're talking about. But ultra processed foods have additives that are negative and damaging to the body when eaten on repeat.
Okay. So if we've decided to try and avoid UPF, ultra processed foods, you've mentioned some of the things that they're in. What can we try and do to avoid that? Let's home in on something specific. Bread. Is bread a UPF?
Yeah, certain types of it, absolutely. There's more healthy breads, as I mentioned, like a sourdough, the store-bought sort of standard loaf that we all turn to, the sliced loaf. They tend to have a lot of additives that will keep it on the shelf for longer. And so some people make their own bread. Some people are looking for ones without processed items, which are, again, like I say, is a sourdough. So there are other choices. Also, you can reduce the amount of bread you have. Say you're a regular, you know, sandwich and a packet of crisps every day. You can mix that up. Maybe one day have a wrap, which is a more healthier option, or a salad, or some chicken, for example, and vegetables. So it doesn't have to be on repeat. That's the sort of message that we're trying to promote, that you can switch it up and add more healthy food around what you regularly eat.
Or try and make your own bread. Flour, water, yeast, and a bit of salt. That four things.
Yeah. Absolutely, absolutely. And that is a wonderful way of providing yourself with that bread if you're able to make it.
I actually, just before this, I looked up the sort of things that might be in supermarket bought sliced white bread. Mm-hmm. So emulsifiers, preservatives, sugar, vegetable oil, and something else actually that to speed up the actual making of the bread, because making bread is a process, takes a while. And I never really thought about this actually until today. Mm-hmm. But they'll put enzymes into the bread to help speed up presumably the working of the yeast. So lots of different stuff can go into bread.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you know what? That process has changed over the years. So if you go back into, without the sort of studies in front of me, but if you go back into the 60s and 50s, we didn't make bread the same way we do now. We do it mass produced. We put all the chemicals in to do it quickly and to make it cheaply. So the bread looks very different than it did all those years ago. And that's where our issue is, that we're adding more to make it quicker and cheaper.
Mm. Okay, let's put the UPF to one side and move on to other stuff. What else, if we're kind of just trying to limit our calorie intake, what other things can catch us unawares like as we're going about our day?
Yeah, absolutely. So this study I mentioned by Yazio has taken a couple of things into account regarding what we call hidden calories, which are interesting because they're the things that just skip past us without our sort of noticing them. And some of them are from beverages. So one of the things they mention is a coffee from a coffee store can really have hidden calories. And people just don't know that. They're sort of confused about that. 38% of people polled believed that a coffee like this from a coffee shop has about 200 calories, but actually it can be as much as 300 and sometimes more when you add in the syrups, the sugars, the creams, all the different things that people do add. It makes it completely different. And on average, we're drinking about 528 cups of coffee per year, which is big, really big numbers, and those calories add up.
Okay, but if you just have a regular coffee with some milk, so that's water, milk, and coffee, you're probably okay, aren't you? It's all this other weird stuff, all the syrups and...
Interesting. If you just have a black coffee with coffee granules and water, it's about 2 to 5 calories. There's really nothing in it. And then you adding a splash of milk, absolutely, it's not going to be calorific. But it is exactly as you say, the syrups, the sweeteners, sugars, etc. I was talking earlier about some of the coffee shops that put a chocolate on top over the Christmas period. So they added another level.
Goodness me. All right. I also did another bit of Googling because I've mentioned them already. Digestive biscuits, little favourite of mine.
Yeah.
I thought, let's see how many calories are in a digestive biscuit. Have you got any idea? I had no idea before I looked it up.
I would say, do you mean like the big sort of round proper ones? Yeah. I would say, let's think, I'd reckon about 60.
Well, not far off. It was about 80.
Oh, more than I thought. Okay, so there's...
So I converted that because I've time for my Halo time now. I've just started doing some indoor cycling, on my Watt bike exercise bike. And if I sit on that thing and pedal away for 25, 30 minutes, I sort of might burn off 250 calories.
Yeah.
And so then if you convert that into digestive biscuits, it's like just over 3, I'll scoff those easily with a cup of coffee.
Yeah, it's a tough one. It is a tough one. I like a shortbread biscuit myself.
So lots of things can kind of creep up on us. All the things we like and make life a little bit better, though, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you see the information on the study about the alcohol as well that can creep up those calories?
Tell us about alcohol.
It's another one of those hidden ones. I think the beverages sort of slip past us a little bit. On the study, and this is partly from the NHS, actually, this one states that if you're drinking wine and you're drinking 4 bottles a month, so just one a week, which is about 4 glasses of wine, this can add up per year to over 32,000 calories that are just quickly drunk through a beverage.
Right. And they don't do you any... Well, I was going to say they don't do you any good. Alcohol has a relaxing effect, etc., etc. So, there are some positives in other areas, but those calories you can do without. They don't actually do your body any good.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think alcohol can interrupt sleep. It definitely is a negative thing on the body. It can cause, a depression, all of those things. So I think the benefits outweigh, sorry, the benefits are not outweighing the negatives really on alcohol. Yeah. And certainly when there's those extra calories as well that are occurring.
All right. So everything is stacked against us. With all that's been stacked against us, how many of us are too fat?
There's big numbers, actually. This report states that 64.5% of adults are overweight or living with obesity, which is really big numbers.
And that has a massive knock-on effect on the NHS.
Yes.
And the taxes we all pay.
Completely.
Outline those a little bit.
Yeah, the effect it has on the NHS is disastrous. I think people that are suffering with type 2 diabetes are a real cost on the NHS, but it's difficult because I don't believe as a nation that we have enough information and support for knowledge on nutrition. I certainly years ago had no clue, and I ate all the wrong things and damaged my health. And so I think the average person doesn't know a good diet from a bad diet and how to avoid the ultra process and how to be mindful of the hidden calories and be aware of portion control and all the things. So yeah, the NHS is struggling, and it is related to a lot of it is related to weight and obesity.
I think you say the average person doesn't know. I think it's a bit more complicated than that, because actually in our heart of our hearts, we all know that is fruit and vegetables is what we should be eating. We shouldn't be drinking alcohol, and we should lay off the digestive biscuits. I think, you know, sure, I think we all know that. Don't you? I mean, we're not doing it, but that's for different reasons. That's a different kind of topic.
Yeah, there is a case to say that. I have a lot of clients who say to me, I know I shouldn't be doing this, and I know I shouldn't be doing that, and, you know, I want to have these things. I think there is a general feeling of wanting that immediate fulfilling thing, like I'm going to have that biscuit, I'm going to have that extra glass of wine, because we want sort of satisfaction and enjoyment in life, and it's, you know, it's difficult. I think in our heart of hearts, most people do know, but we aren't making the right choices.
So really, if in our heart of hearts, we know what's good for us, two questions, really. What should be the role of nutritionists to help us? Because actually, we know what we should be eating. And should government get involved somehow to, I don't know how, and this is a big sort of big brother type question. I just can't imagine what sort of rules and regulations government could include. I mean, there's been the sugar tax recently. I don't know if that's made any difference, but sort of two questions there.
Yeah, have you seen the recent information that we are having a ban on junk food advertising, I think, as of Monday?
No.
Yeah, the government have...
I obviously haven't done my homework properly prior to this. Tell us about that.
It's really exciting, actually. So they're going to have the watershed, which I think they call it, don't they, the 9 p.m. So anything before that is not allowed to advertise junk food. And then if there's a paid a company that wants to advertise foods that are classified as junk food, they're just not going to be able to. And so that starts on Monday, the government's initiative. And I think that's going to be really powerful, because children are being misguided into wanting these types of foods, these fast foods and junk foods. When you have a look at how often they're fed to you during the day, like I can walk to the shops and I'll see three or four adverts on a billboard that have unhealthy junk food. Then I'll, you know, watch the television program, and during the adverts I see it. Then I might open a paper, again and again it's bombarded. So I think that happening is a really powerful positive message to people, that actually the government do want us to eat better, and they want to take away this constant bombardment of advertising.
And presumably if children don't get into the habit of eating this stuff, they will take that into adult life.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're less likely to be to eat this, eat things that are as bad for them.
Yeah, absolutely. The positive messages around food are benefiting us more and more. And I think if we're heading in that direction, it's nothing but good.
Very interesting. All right. Look, if people are listening to this and think, all right, now's the time, I am going to try and do something about thinking about UPF, avoiding things that have just, you know, loads of calories in that I don't really need anyway. Although I've just said that, you know, in our heart of hearts, we all know. If people want some more information, maybe some tactics, some help to sort of push us in the right direction, can you suggest any good resources? I mean, I often ask about the NHS website, which is often brilliant in all sorts of things. I don't know if it's any good in this sphere. So any resources at all?
Yeah, the NHS have, I think it's called the Eat Well Guide, which is mostly a good tool to have. There's also, if you would want like an accountability, support, knowledge, the Yazio app is really wonderful. It helps you track your calories. You can take pictures of your food and it'll give you a breakdown of the nutrition. You can track your daily habits, like the movement and things like that, hydration. That is an easy win, literally, for people to just jump on and get some advice and support to make these changes. One of the things I do as a health coach is I'm coaching people around behavior change because that's the hardest thing. It's like you said earlier, everyone knows the best option, but they don't choose that road. So the work I do is the lifestyle adaptation and behavior change, which is the tricky bit. So when you have, for example, an app like that that's in your pocket and you can refer to it and you can add your details. It's really powerful and helping you get on track.
Good. All right. Well, let's hope we all get a bit slimmer. You never
Oh.
know. All right. So, Sarah, look, thank you very much indeed for taking a few minutes to chat today. This is important stuff. So, thanks.
No problem. It's lovely to meet you.
Thank you very much to my guests on this week's show. And they were Dr. Linda Papadopoulos, psychologist, talking about compliments, and then health coach Sarah Stannard talking about the nation's eating habits. Thank you to you for listening and have a healthy week. Until next week.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Imagine. Every day, clients walk into your office with their concerns about intimacy, identity, desire, and trauma. Questions that require more than basic training. Emotional and sexual dynamics are evolving, and today's professionals must evolve with them. We hear from parents unable to start conversations with their children around identity. Too often, adolescents have learned their sexual ideas from the internet. Couples have difficulty communicating about sex with each other. At the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, you can gain the specialized skills and knowledge to address those issues with confidence. Whether you are a therapist, coach, educator, or other healthcare professional, our advanced certifications and PhD program empower you to become a highly skilled, sought-after sex therapist. Expand your expertise. Elevate your earning potential. Start your journey today with the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Imagine making a difference in our world. Learn more at clinicalsexologyphd.org.
Apples and pears, beef and skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, ant and deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Thanks for listening to the Relax Back UK show. Join me, Mike Dilk, again next week for more fascinating interviews and chat. If you're listening to the podcast version, please subscribe, like, and share it with your family and friends. And have a healthy week. Until next week.